The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. The Explorers podcast is sponsored by RM Capital, a provider of specialist, small to mid-cap corporate advisory and boutique wealth management services. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. Today we're catching up with Thomson Resources to get an update on its work towards establishing a 100 million ounce silver equivalent resource under its hub and spoke strategy in the New England Fold Belt, which straddles the New South Wales and Queensland borders. Thomson is busy elsewhere too, with the company putting together a program of work for its tin and gold exploration projects down in the Lachlan Fold Belt in New South Wales. It is a story that Thomson has taken to the US market, where it is looking at over-the-counter listing, because if there's one thing we know, it's you investors just love silver stories. It's all up, exciting times for Thomson, which looks to be on its way to delivering something this market has been crying out for years, and that is a dedicated silver producer of scale that can bring the economies of scale and flexibility that this market wants to see in a silver stock. On silver itself, the white metal has come off recent highs, but at US$22.70 an ounce, it still remains well ahead of last year's calendar average of US$21 an ounce, and well ahead, of course, of the average for 2019 of $16 an ounce. It seems that industrial applications of the metal look to have come to the party in recent times, keeping silver at good levels while gold goes through its gyrations for a whole bunch of other reasons. Just a reminder that Thomson trades under the code TMZ, or Tango Mike Zulu. It posted a last sale of 8.3 cents for a market cap of about 38 million. We have Thomson's executive chairman with us today, David Williams, to bring us up to speed on the Thomson story. So with that, g'day David, welcome to the podcast and thanks for your time today.
G'day Barry, always a pleasure having a chat with you.
Good stuff. Now, the hub and spoke strategy, how's that coming together?
Yeah, look, it's a lot of activity going on at the moment as far as that's concerned. Probably not seeing a lot out there in the public arena, but that's not meaning that we're sitting with our sitting on our hands and doing nothing. I feel sometimes we're a bit like that proverbial duck. There's a lot of activity going under the water, or underneath the water, but you don't necessarily see it. So, progress is constantly being made, and we're constantly learning more and more about the different projects that comprise the New England Fold Belt hub and spoke strategy. And the one that's really starting to come out as a top project is that Silver Spur one.
Mm-hmm. That's Texas in Queensland?
That's Texas in Queensland, not to be confused with Texas in the USA, of course, although I do love telling people I'm just coming back from Texas. So
it's a bit like Paris, yeah. just before getting into Texas, I've mentioned the 100 million ounce sort of initial target, but you have put out a 21 million ounce resource for Conrad down in New South Wales. That's right.
Yeah? That's correct. Yeah, that was the first of the mineral resource estimates that we're doing. And as listeners will recall, part of the ASX listing rules requirement, something that we were going to be doing anyway, is that we need to restate all of the deposits, all of the previously published resources. We need to restate those ourselves, mm-hmm. and we need to restate them all according to JORC 2012. And it might sound like that's a simple task when they've already been published, but if you want to make sure you've got robust numbers, and as a, with an eye on developing the hub and spoke strategy and developing the mining and the processing of these projects, we're putting a lot of time and effort into that exercise to make sure we've got it right. And the first of those that you've seen out is Conrad, naturally being the first one that we've been working with AMC, our resource geologists on. Yeah, there's a lot more working out what we're doing and how we want to structure it. So that took a little bit longer. but a good outcome. I mean, it came out not only with a very similar number as far as the resources are concerned, you know, similar in grade, similar in ounces, but also it actually came out with a greater proportion in the indicated category versus the inferred category.
Yeah, it's a greater confidence there. Yeah, it's worth mentioning that I think nearly all of these silver projects we'll be talking about today have some sort of history to them. But that's a key part of this hub and spoke strategy, is that on an aggregated basis, it's going to be what might have struggled or had issues in the past become better as the one unit.
I think that's right, Barry. And it's, you know, this area of the New England Fold Belt, very similar in a sense to what we have in our area of the Lachlan Fold Belt, which we'll come on to later on. But it's an area that was very active back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and really sort of kicked off a lot of the silver mining and the silver activity in the eastern states of Australia, and particularly in New South Wales. But then waned and got forgotten. And I think, you know, people would come back and look at the individual projects knowing that they had been mined, and would look at it and come to the conclusion that, yeah, it could be good, but maybe it's not going to go anywhere. It's not large enough. And I think, you know, that was our first impression when we looked at Webbs and Conrad. You know, nice projects, and Conrad, good polymetallic project, but not large enough to stand on their own 2 feet. And that was when then we embarked down the pathway of, why don't you aggregate them all together and then bring those resources to a scale that not only gives you that length of mine life, that therefore helps you ride the troughs as well as the peaks, but also gives you that level of flexibility and optionality, that, you know, if you're getting some issues in one area, or the commodity price is down in part of the minerals in one area, then you can switch across to the others. And so, yeah, you know, bring them together. You've got to do your work. You've got to do what we're doing at the moment of really understanding the metallurgy of the different deposits. But if you crack that nut, and we believe we're well advanced to cracking that nut, then you've actually got a project that's going to work, and with a number of those benefits that I just referred to.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's worth mentioning that no one has ever consolidated these silver positions in the New England Fold Belt before into the one sort of under the one umbrella.
That's right. This is the first time all of these projects have been under the one umbrella. Yes, you had Webbs and Conrad under the Silver Mines umbrella. You had at one stage Silver Spur and Texas under the Alcyone umbrella. But you've never had all five projects under the one, and never looked at in an aggregate way like we're doing, like what you actually often see in perhaps in a more broken up way, but we often see it over in Western Australia, particularly with the gold projects.
Now, we're talking about hub and spoke strategy, so you immediately think of wheels, but Texas in Queensland, this historic silver spur mine, shaping up as a bit of a mag wheel by itself.
It is. And we've got to remind ourselves, of course, is that the Silver Spur mine was what kicked it off in this region going back in those late 1800s. But for the fact that their processing methods were terribly sophisticated or efficient back in those days, it probably would have produced a lot more and kept on going. But, you know, back then it was getting silver grades of 1,000 grams per tonne, the zinc was in the double figures, you know, even the slag heap that sits there on Silver Spur runs at about 25% zinc. So, yeah, you know that it's an area with a good pedigree, and it's one that, as we've gone into now, looking at core that had been drilled by previous operators and doing our own metallurgical work, you know, we're continuing to see in those more modern holes those high grades, you know, in the region of 800 grams per ton, and more importantly, we're seeing very good recoveries, you know, recoveries in that 80 to 90% of both the silver and the zinc.
Yeah. So at Silver Spur, you're still in the sort of data gathering stage?
Well, we're a bit beyond the data gathering. You know, we pulled together the database. We've been through the historic samples and time. We've pulled together now a robust, reliable database, and we're just at that cusp at the moment of completing the geological models and the wireframe models, ready to hand over all of that data to AMC, the resource geologists, for them to commence the work on the state or the restatement or statement of the mineral resource estimate for Silver Spur. And it's important. That's an important part where we get to, because having crunched those wireframes, having crunched that geological model, that then in itself starts throwing up, where do we go next? You know, where do we place the drill rig to increase the resources or find new areas of the resources in that location?
Okay, so what sort of timescale are we looking at there for that flip across to, you know, growing?
As I said, on the mineral resource estimate, we should see that next month coming out, barring any sort of issues that come up through it, and that's sort of fitting in a bit with our time frame of when we want to kick off the New England Fold Belt drilling and exploration programs, and you know, that'll be largely focus on drilling, but it'll also involve some additional geophysical surveys to help us target new areas where we'll want to bring the drilling in. So, we really had to get in our key target areas that comfort in the database of historic information, the comfort in our understanding of what's going on in the area, and our comfort on, you know, where we're going to find the high grade and where we're going to find the high grade that is going to be easily recovered. And in the case of Silver Spur, we're pretty much there. And in the case of Conrad, we know that already, where we're going to be. In the case of the other deposits, we're still working through that. But you're going to start seeing some announcements soon about the programs going forward and the commencement of those programs.
Right. If I could, one that people, whenever I'm talking about Thompson to people, they always ask me, what you're up to at Mount Carrington. I guess it's fairly famous in some people's minds.
Well, that's right. I mean, we're often asked of that, but again, it's a slightly different situation, and that's probably why you don't hear much about it. Yeah. We don't talk much about it. You know, unlike the other projects where we're 100% owners of those, and they, you know, fairly and squarely fit within the hub and spoke strategy. The Mount Carrington project is an earn-in, and that's where we have to do certain work within certain parameters in order to earn an interest in the project. And the parameters are the gold first approach, which was defined. Probably the best way to put it was defined in the preliminary feasibility studies, the PFSs, that was done by White Rock in 2017 and were updated in 2020. And that's focused on the Strauss, the pre-strip pits of the Strauss, Kylo North and Kylo West. And you know, the first stage of that earning is to take the PFS to a definitive feasibility study or a DFS, and also to prepare and submit the environmental impact statement, the EIS. And so we've been doing a lot of work, again, behind the scenes on that, pulling together the consultants, and, you know, we make sure we use best of breed in Australia as far as those consultants are concerned. So it's been a matter of working with them, scoping up that project, working out what additional information we need to have. And in the case of the EIS side, the environmental side, it's also developing up that community engagement strategy and talking to the the local people, and I've already done a quite a tranche of that back in August, of going around and seeing not just for Mount Carrington but for all the hub and spoke projects, mm-hmm. the local members, the local councils, and those interested parties, just letting them know what we're about, what we're doing, what the bigger picture is.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, very important that that community engagement. Now, the Lachlan Fold Belt, you've touched on it before, but it looks like it's going to be a busy December half. You've been working up targets, drill targets.
Yeah, so we're certainly, again, this is another one of those where Owen might seem to be very quiet, but he's pulling out all the information, pulling them together and analysing them. And, yeah, we had this period down there in the Lachlan Fold Belt of the crops are on. And, you know, we had to finish up our drilling back in May because the farmers wanted to sow their crops, and we worked very closely with and very well with the local farmers. But then we're sort of off the ground through to it's end of late November, early December. And so we use this period, and Owen uses this period, to work up and refine the programs for the next tranche of drilling. And it's been a bit wet through the winter months, and so we think it'll probably be a later start as far as getting on the ground with drill rigs. We're also, like a lot of companies, you're having to work through the COVID restrictions as far as drillers and their crews and their rigs are concerned, and that can slow things up a little bit. Not to mention the fact that there's a hell of a lot of exploration activity still going on in Australia. So drill rigs are in high demand, and we should have something out about that very shortly, if not already.
I mentioned the looking at in the US, the over-the-counter potential move, responding, I guess, to what demand from US investors for silver equities.
Yeah, and I think we started down the pathway of investors out of the US in that last raise back in March, and that's when we worked with Roth Capital out of the US to do a first tranche of capital raising. They've remained and continue to be very interested, very supportive, and keen to work with us in further capital raisings. One of the things is we've been talking to them about the next raise is that the need to now have some recognition in the US, and the starting point is OTC, and coupled with that ultimately is the DTC, so the deposit trustee company, where US investors, not so much the institutional investors, but US retail investors, mm-hmm. are then able to trade the stock without necessarily having to go on the ASX. So that's sort of well advanced at the moment, and it's as always, there's another piece of paper you've got to find to put it in. So so we're pretty close, and that interest in the US is very strong, remains very strong, and that also extends through to UK and Europe, where there's that interest in silver, and a silver play as such is much stronger than perhaps what you have seen in the past in Australia, although I think we're starting to see that a lot more, particularly amongst institutional investors.
Mm. One of the big metrics in the US market, of course, is enterprise value per resource ounce. I think we can safely say Thompson is at the starting stalls with its EV per resource ounce. But I was just wondering, you see that reflected in your market valuation, as you say, add the resource base from Silver Spur and then add the others as they come in?
I think, Barry, the first thing that I've noticed, and that there's good days like Silver Squeeze Monday, then there are bad days like Silver Squash Tuesday, or even where we are at the moment, where the silver price is depressed from where perhaps it has been, or more importantly, where it should be. And we now find we're very closely linked to that. So consequently, we've sort of come down in price and consequently in EV per ounce as a as a result. But yeah, we are very well placed on that, and that recent Pitt Street Research analyst report, they made that observation of not only in comparing us with two other Australian listed companies, but then also looking at a couple of companies with similar analogs in Mexico and Argentina, which had multiples in value on it. So yeah, that's where we sit at the moment. But then the other side of it, we know, is that as we get into the exploration and the extensional work as we go forward, that we're very confident we're going to see a natural increase in those resource ounces. Which, of course, if our market cap doesn't move, will just sort of mean that the EV per ounce will be even lower. But we see some tremendous upside as we are able to focus on that, you know, without having to go off and acquire further ounces from other operators.
All righty, David, you've given us a good rundown there, but if you could just bring it home in terms of wrapping it up for investors, what they should be looking out for, say, before year end.
Thompson's been very active in the last 12 months, and maybe appears to have been a little quieter over the current and more recent months. But what investors are going to see is, as we start to get towards the end of the year, is the activity going to increase, and that's not just going to be the completion of the mineral resource estimates, the metallurgical studies, and the completion of the remaining transactions. It's going to be the commencement of drilling programs in the New England Fold Belt, drilling programs in the Lachlan Fold Belt, and the adding to the story and the adding to the ounces and the definition of what the processing facility is going to be about. So, look, it might have seemed to have been a quiet couple of months while everyone's in lockdown, but that, you know, like everyone's getting out in Sydney and enjoying life again, you're going to start seeing that with Thompson as we move towards the end of this calendar year and beyond and into 2022.
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were outlining all that, the 2022 shaping up as a big one, because it's obviously taken time to assemble, one, the deposits that will make up the aggregated project, and then work through and update the resource bases, and then go and do your extensional drilling and your exploration drilling. It all comes together in a big way in 2022, by the sounds of it.
Oh, it does, Perry. And what's, you know, what's key and what's important is that you do it right. And you do it right, you make sure you understand it, and then it's just all going to be positive. But yeah, no, I always remember Steve Nano from Global Ore saying to me, David, you're just at the starting line now. now the 5,000-meter race starts. And, 2022 is going to be another busy year for Thompson Resources.
All righty, David. Well, thanks for that rundown on the company, and we wish you all the best with it. And we'll be watching with interest. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, Barry. Nice talking to you again.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
This episode of the Explorers Podcast was sponsored by RM Corporate Finance, an active participant in emerging companies around the globe.